guess that sounds okay. Put this closer to you, I guess. Let's see. What's the levels look like? As you can tell, this is a big operation, John. That looks okay, I guess.
You know, the one great thing about podcasting is, you know, anyone with a computer and a microphone
can
any asshole. Which includes.
And here I am. Yeah.
Are you insane?
They are insane.
You're in the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
Inaccurate. But Matt Frostin.
It does like you.
Mr. Kip.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
How you doing, Mike?
Oops. Okay, I have teased this for a long time. This interview with John Stern, who is one of the co-creators of Abominable Pictures, which makes Children's Hospital and NTSFU something, whatever it is, with Kate Mulgrew, all these Adult Swim shows. Wet Hot American Summer, the series. He's done all these great things. But more importantly, he's a Star Trek guy. And even most importantly, he's a friend. And he's been jonesing to talk about Discovery. And so yesterday, on my birthday, happy birthday, Worf, I went over to his house and we recorded this this podcast because we like this stuff. And he has some very insightful things to say about Discovery. So check it out. Here I am in your room. All right, I think that's good. Yeah, so let's just start up here.
So what are we talking about today? What show? I forget what show this is supposed to be about.
This is
Battlestar Galactica?
We could talk about Battlestar Galactica. Yeah. We could talk about Galactica 80. Did you ever watch that?
With the movie after the original Galactica series, the movie where they're... No, what, the one where they're on Earth.
Yes.
And everyone who lived on Galactica has the ability to jump very high because apparently the gravity was stronger on the ship, and so they developed super strong legs over their lifetime.
And they have invisible motorcycles. Remember they had motorcycles that could fly?
Rings a bell.
Yeah, they had motorcycles that could fly.
Sure, because the motorcycles were developed in high gravity too, I guess.
Exactly. And it was on Sundays at 7 o'clock in the evening.
Well, 7 o'clock was the kind of rated G time slot in the old days. Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Yes.
Disney's
Wonderful World is Disney, yeah. There's never... Like, Voyagers was on. I think Young Indiana Jones was.
Oh, yeah, Young Indiana Jones.
Yeah, we're going back.
I'm still hopeful for the new Indiana Jones that they make. You know, there's a redemption cycle.
Yeah.
There Odds is. And evens.
You think so?
Well, yeah, because... you know, they made he made the third one to make up for the second one. Of course, a lot of people think the second one is the best.
There's a youth movement that really enjoys the second one, and I'm still hot and cold on that one. Hey, puppy, how you doing?
That's Kiwi.
Hey, Kiwi.
For those,
oh my gosh,
that's Charlie. You're making perfect podcast sound effects.
This is perfect. Hello, puppy. How are you? I'm assuming there's a.
And this dog is Bram. Yeah. So Bram. Bram has one question about Discovery maybe you could help answer.
Hey, Bram, how you doing? I'm Mike. Nice to meet you, man.
Bram, for those of you who can't see Bram, which is all of you, this Bram is 14 years old.
I can see him.
He's my son. We've been watching Star Trek Discovery together.
And what do you think, Bram? What do you think about him?
Okay, but what's the big question you keep asking me?
What is the deal with the disco shirts that they're running?
Oh, the disco shirts. Yeah. So here's my philosophy on my thought process on this is that Star Trek Discovery is STD, right? So no one wants to have like, oh, you want to go watch STD? Hey, have you seen STD? Like, no one likes that. So they changed that to make it disco, to make it cool, but it's not. It's a product thing.
But you don't call so do the people on the Lexington run in shirts that say Lexi?
Lexi,
Do the people in Enterprise run in shirts that say Enter?
Enter.
Like, that's just not how people make shirts.
That's, like, even more suggestive. That's like a terrible thing to have, like, Enter or Constitution Con. Yeah, you're right. The minute I saw it, I knew it was a marketing ploy, and then secondarily something to get people off the idea that this is called STD.
And we did see the shirts online.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
For sale.
Not for sale?
For sale.
Oh, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, they're not giving them away.
They should. They, for like goodwill, they should be giving away these shirts, don't you think?
They should be giving away to make up for us having to watch the show. Right, Bram?
Sure.
Now, Bram, have you watched Star Trek before?
Yeah.
All like the original series or Next Generation or what?
Some of the original series.
Sure, okay. But what movie did I bring you to 6 weeks ago? That I told you about, Mike. I was quite excited that I was able to bring Bram to the movie theater to see.
Oh, right, yeah.
We went and saw The Wrath of Khan.
And what'd you think? Have you ever seen it before?
No, it was really good.
Yeah? So you liked it, like, even though it's like a 35-year-old movie, you liked it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why'd you like it?
I don't know. It was better than some of the movies that are out now.
Yeah. There were, like, real stakes, weren't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was...
Actually, I hadn't watched it for a few years, and I haven't seen it in the movie theater since it came out. It is a perfect movie, actually.
It is.
It's a perfect script.
It's the best movie of all time.
It is. It works as a drama. It works as sci-fi. What great sci-fi, Bram and Mike.
We're trying to convince Bram right now. If you can't tell, we're looking at him, trying to tell the youth of America that throw away all these Avengers movies, throw away all this DC nonsense. You need to go to Star Trek.
What's great was a great sci-fi is when... It doesn't matter that it's sci-fi, that if you can set it in today and it's still a riveting story and everything works.
Mm-hmm.
The sci-fi gives the opportunity. Now here we're going to, the problem with Discovery is there's actually no sci-fi. There's no sci-fi premise. There's no, there is once in a while, but nothing
really meaningful. Yeah.
Where it says, oh, this is a concept we could only explore by putting it in a different time and place because we need... to invent something. We need to invent a situation that wouldn't realistically exist now.
Exactly, yeah.
And they don't do that.
They're so invested in making cool, trendy characters that they forget that this show should be about space and cool things that we should be looking at and exploring. The show's called Discovery. Or maybe it's called Disco. Maybe we should just call it Star Trek Disco, right?
They're going to run out of original space shuttle names pretty soon.
Oh, which ones do they have?
Discovery, Voyager, right? These are real space shuttles, right? Enterprise was a test one.
Yeah.
Which was a big ripoff.
Well, Voyager wasn't. Voyager wasn't one. It was, was it? Enterprise, Discovery.
Columbia.
Atlantis.
Yes.
Atlantis was the new one they built. Challenger.
Oh, gosh.
I know, yeah.
So many of these names are...
I know.
You got to retire them.
You got to retire them, yeah. We have to... Columbia and Challenger.
It was such a ripoff, the Enterprise, naming the first space shuttle the Enterprise. If you remember, there's a huge writing campaign. Yep. Let's call the first space shuttle the Enterprise. And we got it. And everyone's like, great. And then they're, oh, yeah. Well, this is not going to be a real space shuttle. It's just going to be kind of a mock-up that we're going to see how aerodynamic it is. Never went into space.
Yeah. So Bram, what happened was all the Star Trek fans got so excited about the space shuttle that they had a contest. Name this next space shuttle. And everyone said, Enterprise. But that one was just for a test. They put on a Boeing 747, and they tested how it could glide down. It would never fly into space.
That's terrible.
I feel like that's pretty much the same story I just told. But when he tells it, it sounds more riveting.
I give you a little more context, because you're like, maybe I gave you, you know, less context. Maybe I gave you too much.
But also, when you hear Mike's voice say it, listen to Mike's voice. Isn't it a great resonant voice?
This is my morning Star Trek podcasting voice, which we rarely hear.
This is the voice he always has. You can close your eyes. If you hadn't met Mike and you heard that voice, what would you imagine he looks like?
I don't know.
Say more handsome.
More handsome.
Yeah, there we go. See, I look like a good-looking guy, right? But then I'm not. I'm like this weird monster in your living room here. It's like I'm like a Tellarite who has beamed down here, who have come to like harass you. Do you favor admission? I should say that.
I'll explain Tellarites later.
That's right. Yeah.
Tellarite. It used to be a comedy festival.
Right. Yeah.
Now the other thing that you should know about Mike is he has done 73, I think, podcast. Star Trek.
We're at 80 right now. I think 80 or 81. Yeah. We don't stop.
So if you want to listen to all of these back to back, it would be as if you stayed awake for 1 week straight and did nothing but do this. That's how much of Mike's life was spent doing this, rather than he's a father. He could have spent them with his kids.
Nope.
He could have maybe done charity work.
Nope.
Exercised.
But don't you think this is charity work? Don't you think I'm giving back to the community by doing this?
I do. Well, actually, if we can make the show better, assuming that they listen, that I'm sure all the people who work on Discovery listen to these podcasts, take notes, and be like, we're going to make the show better now.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if we should back up here. Right,
I think that's your friend Ben. He's going to get here early.
Okay. I mean, I don't know if we should back up or if we should, I'll probably pre-tag what we're doing now. But we should talk about you for a second.
Okay.
Because we've just kind of launched in this. I don't edit this stuff. I don't care, right? I mean, it's just kind of, you've heard it before. It just kind of rolls.
No, it's documentary more than podcast.
Exactly. Yeah.
When the dogs come in, you're not going to cut that out.
No way. That's the best part. I've had spiders that I've killed, mid-podcast. I had stopped the I didn't stop it. I just let it roll. Because I have this garage, which has, this little office.
A lot of people have garages.
Well, but ours is tucked way in the back, and there's a little office there, which I was like, this is going to be great, except it gets filled with spiders.
That's LA for you.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Spiders and man buns.
And I've never seen a man bun in my garage, but that's okay. I am talking with John Stern here. John Stern is, what's your title?
I am a producer, an executive producer, and a writer, and I have a company called Abominable Pictures, mm-hmm. and we do fun comedies. Some of them, Mike McCafferty actually acts in. I'd like to direct you to something called Broom Shakalaka that was on at 4 a.m. on Adult Swim.
That everyone's seen somehow. I don't know why.
Mike also plays the weatherman in a special episode of Children's Hospital.
Great episode.
Oh, did? Yeah. And Wet Hot American Summer, Burning Love, Mystery Science Theater 3000, Hot Wives, NTSF SDSUV, which is a very fun show if you can watch it on reruns.
Mm-hmm. Did you say Children's Hospital?
I said Children's Hospital.
Okay, Children's Hospital. Were
you ever in Newsreaders?
I was in Newsreaders, yes.
I thought so.
Yeah, I did.
Who were you in Newsreaders?
I was one of the... I was like a reporter for the guy... Who, the football coach who has everyone stripped down naked or something like that? Or I can't remember.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that was fun. And
very good. Ian Roberts was the football coach.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was fun.
That was one of my favorite titles. It was about a football coach who was, it doesn't sound funny when I describe it, who molested his college-age football players.
It's not fun anymore. It's not funny.
it is funny. The title was Put Me In, Coach, but without the comma. So it was Put Me In, Coach.
Oh, God.
Also would have been the title of people traveling, air travel. It could work like that.
Oh, this is true. Yeah, this is...
also, we have a show that just premiered on YouTube Red called Do You Want to See a Dead Body? Created by Rob Hubel.
Okay.
Starring Rob Hubel.
I know Rob, yeah.
And... sometime, date TBD in 2018, I have a movie coming out called Futile and Stupid Gesture, on a Netflix movie, about the early days of the National Lampoon magazine.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, that's going to be great.
Yeah.
I think. Is it going to be great?
I think it is.
Okay.
But,
I heard about that, but it sounds amazing. So,
I'll invite you
who's in it?
Will Forte plays... the co-founder, and Donald Gleason, who I guess this audience may know as the evil general in the new Star Wars films.
Okay.
But he's many other things, too.
Yeah.
Martin Mull. Joel McHale plays Chevy Chase.
That's how I remember that, yeah.
Matt Walsh plays the publisher. These are all real characters. John Gemberling is John Belushi.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
I could go on. But anyway, all fun stuff, all comedies, and I've had the pleasure of working with Mike on a number of them.
And none of that matters right now. None of it matters. It's all so small. Everything you and I have done, John, is so small. I don't want to diminish us.
Yes.
Although John's in a very nice house, right? He lives in a very nice house. But here's the thing.
Although the tie-in, NTSF SUV, if you ask Paul Scheer, he'll confirm this. Paul and I did it together, sometimes with Curtis Gwynn. I'd say about half the episodes are ripoffs of Star Trek. Star Trek is, you know how there's some people say there's 64 original plots, 48 original plots, whatever, number. Pretty much every dramatic plot is a Star Trek episode, an original series Star
yes,
Trek episode.
Yeah.
So you can derive any drama from one of these original series Star Trek episodes.
I fully believe that. And every time I write something, all I do is try to put it into a Star Trek. Like I try, okay, what Star Trek am I going to do? And if you watch The Orville, they do that 95% of the time too. So
what if I don't watch The Orville?
You don't have to watch The Orville. The Orville.
Yeah, then. I had DVR the whole season.
Oh, okay.
And then I watched the first one and I couldn't even stand to have them on the DVR. I erased the DVR.
No. See, here's the thing.
Using up valuable space.
I completely agree with that, especially the first one. The first one's terrible. The first one, like when they're introducing everyone down the line in that cargo bay, is like the most painful sequence. Here's my counter-argument, is that it is like, it's Star Trek Jr. And you could have your son watch it, and he would be like, oh, okay, I like that, because my kids like it. And my kids sit there and say, Dad, can we watch The Orville? I'm like, yeah, we can. And they get like they've done an episode which is a direct ripoff of For the World is Hollow and I've Touched the Sky. I mean, they do so many direct ripoffs of stuff. But it's done with like a huge budget. And as long as Seth MacFarlane isn't, you know, in the shot, it's not bad. It's like, oh, if I squint my eyes, it's not bad. So it's kind of in the Star Trek Continues vein. And the jokes are getting smaller. Fewer and fewer jokes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they went from 2 to 1?
or they went to the negative answer.
I do need to admit, I haven't listened to all 80 podcasts of I Just Want to Talk About Star Trek. So if we're covering ground that you've covered before, just flag it. We don't need to do it again.
No. I have teased you, like I told you earlier, for like 15 to 20 episodes. Like, we're going to talk to John. Because, see, let me tell you how our connection started up. So I was in John's office. I was going to pitch him a show, a pilot. And I was there with myself and my producing partner, Mike, and Becca. And we were sitting there. And we're all set to pitch this thing. And I noticed John had this book of Star Trek posters based off of every single episode of the original series. And I leapt into that. And John and I started talking for a good 30 minutes about Star Trek. Much to the chagrin of Mike and Becca, who don't know anything about it. They had to do like the, haha, right, yeah, right. Like they knew nothing about it, but we didn't care because we had this mind meld. It was amazing. And from that point on, everything has been through the lens of Star Trek between the two of us. And when I showed up for your birthday,
What did you bring?
I brought you two books. I brought you a paperback of Great Expectations.
Uh-huh.
It was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
Uh-huh. Gee, that rings a bell.
Yes, yes. And then I also brought you, because there was a book of Great Expectations that they had, which was like for $200. It was like a cool book. Couldn't afford that. But I bought you like a $15 book of Moby Dick from the 1930s, which is pretty cool too.
Because, of course, Khan quotes it obsessively throughout
the book. Yes, yes. And if you go through that book, I highlighted where he quoted it. It's like the last few pages.
I did see.
Did you? Okay, good, good. All right, good.
I did the book. So now I can't resell the book. No. It's not in mint condition.
That was the point. I don't want you to... That's yours forever, John.
Oh.
But John's been wanting to talk about Discovery. He finally finished all of them.
That's Joanne, by the way. Joanne, this is Mike.
Hi, Joanne.
Hey,
nice to meet you.
How's it going?
Good. Oh, that's right. You're part of the podcast now, by the way, so... Do you like Star Trek, Joanne?
I'm medium about Star Trek, I have to say.
Oh, that's okay. That's fine. We're just, you know,
she doesn't even watch. So she doesn't hasn't seen enough Star Trek to have a negative opinion about it or a positive opinion.
Right.
Yes, really. I'm kind of just right in the no opinion lane.
You're perfect. You are perfect.
You picking up Arlo?
I am.
Oh, all right.
Well, it's nice to meet you.
Yeah. You too.
Yeah. So I
don't. We'll see her when she'll be back.
Oh, okay. That's all right.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, so...
We're all just living our lives here.
I know.
And then podcasts, you know, are just part of our lives. It's not like you have your life and you have your podcast. It's all together.
It's all together because there's just not enough time. Although I do mine usually Sunday nights, but today...
Well, because you have to review the Discovery that was just on.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that it's over for a couple of reasons. But first of all, I have some time to actually, like sort of clear my mind and talk to people. Because before it was just like, you have to watch it and you have to talk about it. And I thought that would be a good idea, but it wasn't.
Well, Mike and I agreed that we wouldn't do this podcast together until the season was over so we could really look back on it.
Yes. And this is good because like it's been like a week or 2 weeks now since the last episode aired.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a kind of chance to digest it. And we've never heard John's opinion. So, John, give me an overview of what you think of the show.
All right. But also, let me say that I don't want to let the podcast get away from us without ultimately talking about some really great new Star Trek episodes.
We will talk about that.
To boldly go.
Yes.
Parts 1 and 2.
Yes. No, no, that is definitely going to be on the docket. So we'll do Discovery first, and we'll get to Star Trek Continues.
All right. And also, in talking about Discovery with you, you know, I've heard your podcast. You already did, you know, where you poked fun at and pointed out all the nonsense, which we could easily do for hours.
I don't mind going over. If you want to reset it again, I'm thrilled.
But I would really like to look at it, to analyze it for you. Forget that as Star Trek. Forget that we're Star Trek fans.
Yeah.
Just as television. Now we're looking at it critically. We're TV critics. Mm-hmm. How's the writing? How's the producing of the show? What is done? How is it as a TV show? Forget whether it's Star Trek-y or honors the vibe of Star Trek, because it sometimes doesn't.
Lots of times. It's
And what Mike said to me after the first episode was on, and we quickly emailed about it, he's like, yes, it is a show with Star Trek in the title.
Yeah.
And that says it perfectly. My complaint is that it's not great science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's middling drama. It's very well produced. I have no problems with that. And acting, and it's wonderful. And you can feel how they rebooted the writing staff after working on it for however many months.
Yeah.
You feel a lot of things that were tried out and dropped, and a lot of failed attempts and character that they're setting up that never comes to play. But my biggest complaint is it just doesn't work as drama. And it sometimes works as action and a war movie, but not really enough to be compelling. And if Star Trek was not part of the title, I would not be watching this show. That's unfortunately the way I feel about it. I have high hopes that a seasons 2 or 3, they'll be able to build with the strong elements that have been created and make generally a new show. Fortunately, anything can happen from this point forward on the show. They've ended the half season. I'm just going to call it the season.
Yeah, yeah.
With this Klingon War behind us, if they want to move away from this and not make this a series about the Klingon War, they can. They're now, we don't know where they are and when they are, and that's great. Now we can do anything with this show. We have some characters, and we have a ship, and we have a transporter, and whatever. So that's why I'm hopeful. And they have some downtime to analyze it, and they clearly were struggling this first season based on the fact that it took them 2-3 years and several different turnovers in writing staff to put it together. So there's no secret there.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, from a drama standpoint, I don't understand what they're doing. I don't understand what they're trying to do, because it's so many starts and stops. You know, the first 2 episodes, and then this Michael Burnham thing, I don't know what they're trying to do. She just succeeds all the time. She keeps on falling up. If you take it away from science fiction, it's not a very compelling drama. So it's difficult to see. My only hope was at the end of the last episode 9 of this season, is that like you said, maybe they get rid of the Klingon story. Maybe they've just maybe they've gone someplace completely unknown and are just gonna hard reboot it again.
Yeah.
You know, let's just go to a different dimension and just try again, you know.
It's just, well, let's talk about the Klingons for a second. And then we don't, you know, hopefully we won't have to watch that much. So I've obviously been keeping notes of my complaints all season.
Yes, yes.
Here on my phone. That's how people don't write their notes on paper anymore. They write them in their phone.
Yeah, yeah.
And in Star Trek.
Yes.
It's no paper. And a few complaints. I'm sure you've talked about why do they have to reinvent their look? It's so extremely.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I can get behind it if the new look was really great, but it's not. It's just kind of stiff and so different from the other looks that were working. But okay, we spend so much time on the inner workings of the politics of the Klingon Empire. All of these people of whom are dead by the end of the first season.
Right.
So we've invested a lot of time in these relationships and characters, which, to be honest, are never that compelling to start with. But if I have one complaint about the Klingons, it's that they speak so slowly. And so much screen time just waiting for them to get these words out.
Yes.
I don't know how they battle, because it's like, you know, before you fire, I am slowly going to make a speech in Klingon about the glory that waits for us all. And when I give the word, you, it is your honor to now press the fire. And then it's too late.
I know, yeah. Well, we saw that when they're sitting there and the big photon torpedo goes right through their like bay window.
Because they're so easily distracted. All, everyone. Everyone, stop what you're doing. Watch. Watch our fight. So,
there's only an enemy spaceship which is teleporting around your invisible ship. Like, and you're doing nothing about it.
Well, I mean, that's another classic. Yeah, Starfleet, we've been working on it for months, how to figure out how to see through the cloaking device. Huh. Well, what if we did this? Let's do it! Like, huh.
Yeah.
I guess Starfleet is just a bunch of idiots, right?
Yeah, they kind of are. I mean, because they also haven't, they haven't taken the spore drive and put it in any other ships, just the one that exploded. They just, like, you know, they're like, well, this seems to be working really, really well. Let's keep it in this one ship with this crazy captain who, oh, by the way, we need to replace him, right? That's on my to-do list. Replace crazy captain. No, let's keep him going.
Another complaint about the spore drive is, why does the disc spin around? First of all, they built the ship before they had the spore drive.
Yeah.
Right? So that disc spins around. Oh, so far, we've only seen the disc spin around when the spore drive is engaged.
Yeah.
But not why. There's no reason that the spores would need to do that. That makes no sense.
Right.
But they, that disc, that spinning disc, was built into the ship before the invention of the spore drive.
I know.
What for? Why would you do that?
I don't know. It's the most phenomenal thing. And they, I think they've only shown it once now, that I recall. Of the disc actually spinning, because now they have like the shot from the back where the whole thing like spins, the whole ship spins. Because I think they realize that, like, oh my god, this is the stupidest thing we've ever done. Because no one can live on that, right? No one can live on that thing, because otherwise it becomes one of those tilt-a-whirl things. You're like, oh my god, code black.
Everyone pressed against the walls.
Like everything is just smushed, you know. So it's a completely useless space, and so I think they're like, we got to rethink this. Because, like, they've wasted, like, at least 15% of the ship, right? You know, they can't go running through that ship anymore. So, yeah, so I think they made a horrible mistake with that. But, yeah, it is a terrible design. I don't know why they built that, but it's a very funny idea.
So here's a take I have about a positive and a... Well, I was really into the idea that we weren't following a captain. That a captain would be a supporting character.
Yeah.
And that still is generally the case, but I want more captain. And here, it reminds me of how the West Wing started. If you ever read the pilot for the West Wing, you don't even meet the President of the United States until the very last shot, and you have one line. Everyone talks about him. And the intention at the beginning of the West Wing, from what I've read, was that Bartlett, thank you, would be... just kind of a periphery character, and it would be a big deal whenever we saw him on screen, but it's about all the other people.
Yep.
And by, you know, probably season 3, Bartlett is your main character, because you can't help it. It's compelling, he's an interesting character, he's a great actor, and the stories are revolving around him, and it just worked. And I see that same dynamic happening here. The idea of being like, it's not really going to be about the captain, in fact, we're barely going to see the captain, but... Lorca is a good character, an interesting character, maybe the most interesting character, maybe not.
I think so.
And he is a great actor and brings a lot to that, and is also put into situations throughout the season that make you think, questioning what decisions to make, putting himself in moral quandaries, ones that Burnham just doesn't have. Burnham is acting... Lorca is thinking. And because of that, I see the show already moving more towards a Lorca-based, captain-based protagonist, which is okay, just disappointed it didn't work out the other way.
I mean, it's interesting you mentioned West Wing, because I believe that too. And, like, I watched West Wing, and after the midway through the first season, you see them starting to move towards... Because, you know, not Charlie Sheen, but Martin Sheen just plays the hell out of it.
And Charlie, you're thinking of Charlie Rose.
I was thinking of Charlie Rose. Yeah. We can't think of Charlie Rose anymore. No, he's done. There's so many people we can't think of. but they, you're right, they had an opportunity sort of like, I don't know if you watched the Next Generation episode, Lower Decks.
Yeah, exactly.
That's I wish they would have done that. That was such a great path where it's like, oh my God, that's Riker, that's, you know, Commander Riker, and that's Worf, you know, like, where these kids, they're failing all the time, and they're just trying to make these incremental gains. That would have been so much fun. But the problem is Burnham episode, like...
Or like the book, John Scalzi book. What is it, Redshirt Diaries?
I haven't read that one yet.
It's not Redshirt Diaries, something. I think it's just Redshirt. Or it's a... Anyway, it's a great book.
Uh-huh.
It's in a Star Trek type... Federation type ship, and it's following those characters. Now it goes, and they're bitter and hostile because they keep getting sent, you know, into dangerous situations. And
right.
It's a real, it's almost a workplace comedy, but it's not. And then it goes somewhere really meta and interesting. And
oh, okay.
Highly recommend it, John Scalzi.
I'll get it. John Scalzi wrote, didn't he write, Forever War or Old Man's War?
Old Man's War, you bet. And that series, yeah.
Oh, great. I read that. I love that. That's good
this
book.
This is his first book. I think he published it, like self-published it on Amazon. And
oh, okay. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, I'll get it. Yeah, that's... I always have like a sci-fi read towards the end of the year where I get like one sci-fi novel between like Christmas and whatever, and I try to read it by the end of the year.
Oh, you can read... This one's faster.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And I read his Old Man's War. It's a good book.
I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Oh, but no, I was just saying, I think you're absolutely right. The problem was that, like, after episode two, is that already she is subverting the authority. She's mutinying, you know, mm-hmm. which, like, none of those Lower Deck characters ever do. I mean, they don't respect... Like, in West Wing, Rob Lowe did not, like, take over, you know, America. You know? Like,
right.
I'm president today. Like, no, that doesn't happen. And already they went to that. And so any sort of authority that she had was gone. And then Burnham does it again and again and again. Mm-hmm. And it's just... And Lorca, Jason Isaacs, seems to be the one person that she can't necessarily subvert. He's too good of an actor and too good of a character right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm rooting for him. I'm mm-hmm. rooting for him to say, like, stop this subordinate, subversive force in on your ship. Because otherwise, you know, like, it's not Star Trek again. You know, it just becomes like a weird amalgamation of someone trying to do whatever they want on a spaceship because they're cool, you know?
Yeah.
So I agree with you on that they had an opportunity and they consistently fall over themselves to make that not happen. They consistently subvert themselves in the writing to make that happen. And I think the other thing too is that I like Lorca. I like Jason Isaacs. But they keep on doing the, is he evil, is he not? He's got to put eye drops in, you know.
Oh, don't make a start about the eye drops. First of all, clearly, this was something that got written into the first episode, and they're like, oh, fuck, now we're stuck with this.
Yeah.
And because what does it tell you about the character? Anything? No. I mean, you might as well just give him a limp. And then,
yeah.
Or a prosthetic finger. It, you know, it
one
does,
prosthetic finger.
Yeah, because it doesn't actually affect his life in any way, except for once in a blue moon, it's like, turn down the lights. Turn down the lights.
Yeah.
Didn't we dim the lights a little, please? You know, that's and
when the Klingons, the only way they're going to punish him is by turning on bright lights. Like, my God.
They can torture him a number of different ways. It doesn't matter that he has this particular... It could be loud noises.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Farts. They could put him in a room full of farts. And he... This tells us nothing about the character. It is not truly a weakness. And they're kind of moving away from it. And it reminds me, it's this version of the Next Generation saucer separator.
Right.
Which they put in the beginning. Oh, this is going to be so cool. We're going to get so much mileage out of this.
Yeah.
Doing the first episode, it's like, well, what do we do with that?
We did it. They did it one other time, I think. Maybe twice.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was it. And then they did it in Generations, and they never did it again. It's saucer separation seems like a great idea, but then you have this weird, like, frisbee flying around. So.
Also, no one would ever make a ship like that. Well, I mean, I guess you could. Every module to the moon work that way.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, like, in an emergency, it makes sense, but, like, the idea that you're going to separate every single time is just ridiculous. Now, like, are they going to separate the saucer on this thing? Is it going to spin away, you know? Is it, like, is it going to be, like, I guess if they're, like, landing, like, in a place with atmosphere, they can use like a helicopter. You know, I'm like, use that spinning thing, you know, the Discovery saucer separation thing.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, that's what it's for. That's why they built
it. Yeah, it's just a helicopter. oh, gosh, I was going to say something about that.
Lorca Eyes.
Yeah. See, here's why I was thinking about this today. Is it seems like television now, because I was kind of comparing this a little bit to Westworld. Have you seen Westworld?
You know what? Well, yes. And I love Westworld.
Oh, you love Westworld.
But it's flawed.
Okay.
but it's a very similar situation. Westworld shot 3 episodes and then shut down for 6 months to rewrite it, or shut down 4 months. And you can feel it in the story. It's exactly what you feel here.
Now, did you watch it all at once, or did you watch it week by week?
Week by week.
Okay. So I watched it week by week. I had lots of problems with it. Partially because of that. But here's my thing, which I think showrunners are trying to do, which is that it used to be like, we're going to come up with something really clever, and then we're going to surprise you, and all the clues were laying out there in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a Sixth Sense kind of thing, where it's like, oh my God, I was there in front of me all the time. And now, because the crowdsourcing of all information makes that impossible, because like even in the last episode, you know, people screen captured to show that Lorca was pushing. Did you see that where Lorca, like when they were setting the destination, he was like, to crazy place, go.
Yep, I read about that. So.
So we all know about that. So now it seems like they're like, oh, well then we just won't give you any information, and then just sort of like foist this upon you with no sort of, you know, preamble to it. You know what I mean? So it's just like, oh, and you know, now, you know, Saru is evil because, you know, and
oh, you're talking about the planet? Yeah. Saru...
Yeah.
I mean, for a minute there, you thought it was like the spores.
Right.
And, I mean, the Spock spores, you know. The
little dusty things that were flying out all the place.
Yeah, yeah, you know, that made Spock loosen up.
Right, yeah,
well,
yeah.
You know that. What was it, name of that?
This Side of Paradise, I think.
This Side of Paradise. I knew it was Paradise song.
Yeah, yeah.
With Charles Bronson's wife. What was her name?
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't realize that.
And so you would think, all right, so Saru is acting differently. The only logic we could come up with is he's acting differently because he's under some sort of biochemical influence.
Yeah.
But it turns out that wasn't it. He was just kind of loosening up. This is a perfect example of writing that wasn't working.
Yeah, he was just acting like just a crazy person.
I'm not saying it should come from some sort of outside source, but it wasn't believable that his behavior changed so radically.
Right.
Without, based on simply... the fact, biomedical factors.
Yeah, there was no breadcrumbs for us to follow.
Yeah.
And I feel like that for this, and maybe a little bit in Westworld, although people had kind of guessed out what was going on with Westworld, you know, like towards the end, but it becomes such a labored experience that it's not fun. You know, like there's no like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that. So I feel like as you know, and you're a writer, I mean, we either have to either embrace that craziness where it's like, we're going to give you nothing and then surprise you with something because we came up with it. We hid it from you. We hid the ball so much from you that you're never going to be able to figure this out. And when you do, it's not going to be satisfying. Or...
It's the wrong kind of show for that.
It's the wrong kind of show, yeah.
You know, that's appropriate for Westworld, but this is a show... That's a show about... many things, actually, but beings programmed to live out to work towards a secret goal. I mean, that's actually very much about what Westworld is about. It's not what this is not what Star Trek should be about. It's not what most drama should be about.
Exactly.
We want to actually follow characters who are behaving in an emotionally logical way, even if not the way we would behave, but that there is a cause and effect to their behavior, there's a cause and effect to their actions, and that there is a progression or an evolution to these relationships or to their situation as a result of this.
Exactly.
And when it feels like it's random, even if in hindsight it wasn't random, it's very hard to be along for that ride.
Exactly. Yeah, it's so much. Star Trek is so much more in the execution than it is in the surprise of it. And that if I go back to the Orville a little bit, I know.
No, please do.
No, because one of the things that actually surprised me about that show was that it's kind of like ridiculous, like Star Trek light, you know, cosplay for Seth MacFarlane. But towards the end, they'll come up with some sort of like crisis, like of ethics or of morality, and they'll make a choice that surprised me. But it's still within the confines of what the characters would do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's one. I'll give it away. Like the Klingon guy, him and his husband, because they're all males, right? So he has a husband. That species is all males.
Okay.
And they have a female. They give birth to a female for the first time in like hundreds of years, and so they want to do a gender reassignment to make her.
I read about this one. Yeah.
Yeah, to make her a male. And so they have a trial, which is very Star Trek-y. You know, they have like a big mallet that they, you know, gong. It's very, very Klingon.
Sure.
And I'll spoil it for
Gongs
you.
Gongs are the most effective means of communication.
Boom. Or circular rocks. Remember circular rocks in Star Trek VI with the judge? Boom, boom, boom. The witness will answer the question. It's great. I love that weird Klingon. Well, all I'll say is that at the end of that episode, they made a choice that surprised me.
Okay.
Like the ruling that came down and what happened was that changed it was different than I thought. And I was like, well, that's different. It's still within the confines of the story, right? It's not like, and then a spaceship came up and the baby's actually an alien and goodbye. You know, it's nothing like that. It was something that was completely within the possibilities, but it wasn't the one I expected. And so I liked that because it's like Star Trek, but with a 21st century tiny twist.
To those at home, I'm nodding. I'm nodding.
He's nodding. Right. Yes, he's
acknowledging in a positive reinforcing way.
John's like in a 35% like on board with this right now. I moved him from like 6% to 35%. I could tell. I was like, okay, still
I'm
not gonna
listening.
Watch it. Yeah,
go on.
I'll text you a couple episodes, which are the ones you should watch, because there's a couple ones like meh, okay. But a couple ones like. Yeah, but like, and that's why, like,
is there a way to kind of get things back on your DVR that you've erased?
Well, you can watch it on Fox Now. You got to watch some bad commercials.
Okay.
Like a Chantix commercial, like for non-smokers or stuff like that.
Oh, speaking of, I assume you've covered this in depth on your previous podcast.
Please go ahead.
But is the core demographic for Discovery people who use prescription medications?
I'm so afraid that somehow they figured out my age and they're targeting all these diabetes and smoking commercials towards
me. We're only seeing commercials. Different people are seeing different commercials.
I don't know. I know that my friend Kim, but she's like our age too. She's actually older than us. The doctor's older than us, but she sees different ones. So I don't know if it's based upon any sort of cookies that you have.
Oh,
so
because I'm seeing. Yes, a couple of Verizon commercials.
Yeah.
And then back to back pharmacy, you know, the kinds where they spend 50 minutes telling you all the side effects and warnings.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. There's the, what is it, the sun will come out tomorrow, where the guy's like, Dad, Grandpa, will you climb up these steps? He's like, maybe tomorrow. I'm like, oh my God. Like that's the best he can do is take a medication and climb the steps tomorrow?
If you follow it, then he takes the medication, then he climbs the steps.
Like tomorrow, yeah. But like it's like today, I got nothing. So it's,
well, he didn't take the medication yet.
I know. But it's just such a weird, like pushing off of the idea of, you know, like, yes, I took my medication. I can do it today. But somehow they got the rights for tomorrow. And they're like, hey, we're going to roll with this, you know.
I think it's just a classic before and after scenario.
But they don't show him doing it. He just says, I'll do it tomorrow. Don't they? I don't think they do.
There must be a shot of him playing basketball or something, or, you know, on stilts. Yeah,
exactly.
What do people do when they suddenly have energy?
Yeah.
Trampoline.
I don't do any of that stuff. We got a trampoline in our backyard. I let the kids jump. All right. So we've talked about... Let's make sure we're still recording here. Yes, we are. Okay. So we've talked about Discovery. Let's slide over into what we really want to talk about.
Well, can I give you just a few random observations?
Yes, please. Please do. This is the best.
Okay. The bridge crew, there's a couple of really interesting looking bridge crew members that never open their mouths.
Yes.
Did they just suddenly run out of money and be like, now we can't upgrade those people? You know, we can't give away... If you pay an extra is about, what, $125 a day?
Yep.
But you put them through makeup all day, they're already like a special category of extra.
Yeah.
They're already probably getting a day rate of $963 a day.
Right.
Give them a line. Give them a line
because, I mean, you're right.
But they're acting as if like, oh, no, you can't say anything because then we're going to have to pay you another $200.
Because we had the Daft Punk guy, the guy with the red alert face, we call him that, who died on the Shinzo.
Yeah.
And then we have a robot girl. She's talking now.
Oh, is she? Okay,
she
great.
Has a couple lines. Fly face guy, you know, the guy with the giant face. Yep. He hasn't said anything, so I don't know about him. And then there's like girl with crazy things on her face.
Yep.
She talks though.
Does she? No, barely.
Barely.
I got a feeling these are all very interesting characters. I'd like to meet them.
Yeah. But so, and like even further, are they, is this SAG or is this like Canadian SAG? Isn't there?
Oh, do they shoot this in Canada?
Yeah, it's shot in like Toronto.
Oh.
So it's even cheaper, you know? I mean, these guys, they're spending $8 to $10 million and give Crazy Face Guy a line, right? Because I want to hear that guy
talk. The guy has been in makeup for 4 hours.
I know.
And now he's been sitting on set in the background. And you cut to him reacting. You're constantly cutting to these people reacting.
I know.
Just have them, when they react, verbalize it a little bit. Like, oh, snap. Or whatever. What would they say?
That's a lot of money on the table they're wasting. You know, I want to hear that guy talk. Okay. All right, go ahead. What else you got?
This is, and I don't mean this in a jokey way, like, Burnham is... It's no longer about like someone who's Vulcan trying to live with humans. It's about someone who's autistic learning to integrate into a larger society. And I don't mean that in a jokey way.
But
if this were a drama and you told me this is about an autistic character that's going out to the real world, it would be really interesting.
That is probably one of the best comments I've heard in a long time. That's really interesting because you're right. If they took away every reference to her being Vulcan, she would appear to be autistic because of her analytical mind, her inability to deal with humans, and then sudden outburst for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. It does. She's
trying to understand and read humans.
Yeah.
And understand what is the appropriate way of interacting, but doing it when a Vulcan does it, they don't have the goal of passing as human, or they're like, but I'm a Vulcan, and that's that.
Yeah.
But this is a different character. This is a character who starts with the limitations a Vulcan has, but has the goal of becoming human in a way that could have been explored. All right. Also, she can't give the Vulcan neck pitch, right? She shouldn't be.
Yeah.
That is, it's an energy that comes out of their fingers. It's not something you learn. Kirk said on many occasions, oh, I wish you'd teach me that someday. Lord knows I've tried. Spock says, it's... Vulcans can give it. Humans can't learn how to give it.
Right.
She can't do it. She does it several times. Yeah. It's not right.
Well, now Data does do it, so it may be a thing of strength. I would buy into that. That like because Data has the tensile strength. Because Vulcans are much stronger. I would buy into that.
But she's not a Vulcan.
I know she's not. Yeah, and she does it. She does it on Giorgio, you know, and she does it. Yeah, she does it multiple times. So she is. You're right about that.
All right, so let's talk about that one more jump that Stamets does in that last episode.
Yes.
We're all saying, like, what are you doing one more jump for? Why? You asking? You just said it's just 3 hours, we could do that. So I buy that Lorca's manipulating the situation, that Lorca wants to do it.
Yeah.
But I can't buy that Stamets is like, all right, for you, one more jump. I just went through hell.
Yeah.
I barely survived. My brain's torn apart. But... it's a shortcut, right? Like, yeah, let's go in the toll road. You know, we'll save a few minutes. We'll get to the airport sooner. I'll do it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, and if it's Lorca trying to be manipulative, I mean, how much did he have to, because he's like, no, let's go back, warp 5, it's no big deal. I mean, yes, maybe he's being passive aggressive, but this guy was through hell. And he was like, no, you don't have to jump. And at any point in time, Stamets had been like a regular human and said, like, oh, thank you, I won't.
Yeah.
Then what's Lorca's plan?
Yeah.
Because if his plan was to not go to Starbase 46 and get arrested or, you know, like, relieved of duty for, like, all of his crimes, I guess, I mean, I don't know what his crimes are anymore. I mean...
He's off the hook because the last scene is they give him, you know, a hero award, the Medal of Honor. They clearly forgiven him.
There was some postulation on the internet that was, like, a ruse to get him to come back.
No.
I agree too. Just give him an award, man. Like, you saved the Federation. You're a little crazy. So what, man?
But he did go back.
He tried to go back.
Oh, he didn't go back to the base. He went close. But then he sent, he said, I told him to give the award to you.
Right, yeah.
To Samus. All
right. This is where this character really kind of breaks down with Lorca, because I just don't understand, and they don't understand what they want to have happen to him. Like, is he good? Is he evil? What's the big deal? So, anyway.
Here's what I want to see for Lorca. Not that he's evil. I don't want an anti-hero here.
Yeah.
I don't want a backdoor. I don't want the Sopranos of captains. Right, I just want a captain who is not by the book, but who's not a goody two-shoes. Beyond that, who got a real dark side, but ultimately, you feel like he's on the right side. And not he's doing things for his own personal gain, that he's still doing things for the right motivations, but he is way outside of the system.
He's getting the job done in a time of war.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want to see. Like, this is wartime captain. That's great. I mean, like, mm-hmm. and in peacetime, maybe it's like, I mean, there's some people also speculate he might be Garth of Izar. You know, like a guy who during the war was, you know, so necessary, but then when war ran out, what do you do? What do you do with mm-hmm. these people? You know, I guess they did a little bit in Star Trek Beyond, too, where they had, like, the
mm-hmm.
those guys, you know. I mean, you know, we were decommissioned, and, you know, so I went off and turned into a monster. And you know.
Right. I mean, still don't understand quite why their bodies and faces change, and also where all the ships came from. And okay. So that's...
Anyway, yeah. That's another podcast.
But one thing I really appreciate in the series is Lorca's love interest, the Commodore, was age-appropriate.
Ah, yes. Yes, she was, yes. Completely unqualified to be the admiral. Because she used to be a psychologist.
You know, counselors.
Like just promoted to admiral, like a fleet admiral who can relieve someone of duty because... And then sleeping with him... I got 50 minutes, you know?
Yeah. Oh,
hey, man. That was the best part, you know?
Well, I was watching Bram, who you all met earlier, was watching that with me.
Yeah.
And as soon as he said, well, if we're just doing this as friends, let's have a drink. And I said to Bram, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
And he's like, no way, Dad. They're not going to do it. I'm like, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Just watch.
Yeah.
I so gloated over that one. Because of course they're going to do it.
Yeah.
But I was thrilled that it was age appropriate.
She's not 25 and into him. Yeah. So that's great. We'll give him that.
Okay, so he needs a new security officer. Now we're back at episode 3.
Yeah.
Needs a new security officer. A lot of people on the ship promote from within, but instead here's a complete stranger who has been psychologically tortured for 8 months.
Yep.
I'll give him a shot. All these other people on the ship, this guy leapt right over them. Obviously, we all thought he was a spy all season.
Yeah.
I thought that the tribble that Lorca had on his desk, which seems to have disappeared.
Yeah, it comes and goes, yeah. That's the biggest mystery of the show. Where does it go, you know?
I thought the tribble was there as a setup that one day the security officer would walk in there and the tribble would go nuts.
Yeah.
Like in The Trouble with Tribbles,
right.
When the undercover in disguise Klingons show up. The tribble goes nuts.
Yeah.
So I thought that's how we were going to identify this. Is there's some... Okay. Moving on, obviously. I'm sure you've covered all of this. Saru.
Mm-hmm.
He is full-on original movie Planet of the Apes mouth prosthetics.
Oh, yeah. We've...
Okay. But from the side, looks great. Profile... It works.
Yeah, profile looks good. As soon as you're getting tight on that mouth, those teeth, that's rough.
You can see a mouth inside the mask.
I know. You can see human teeth in there, which begs so many other questions. And threat ganglia.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. So disgusting.
Which too. Never work, right? They never work. I mean, every moment they should be going up with Burnham, like, blah, blah, blah. They should, like, grab her and just, like, kill her or something. Sting her to death or something.
Opening credits. Have you talked about these?
Yes, we have, yeah.
Okay, well then I'll just add my 2 cents, which is, it's basically the Westworld opening music cue, completely unmemorable.
Uh-huh.
And it's a graphic kind of design that tells me zero. Tells me nothing. And we now instantly skip through them. There's nothing compelling about
it. I call it the T. Rowe Price commercial music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that middle section, you know, like you're trying to make your money go further. You know?
Right.
Listen to it. You'll never hear it differently again.
You can't have a holodeck. There's a holodeck. I mean, at least they only used it once. You can't have it. First of all, you can't. Moving forward, the get off the ship once in a while. We've had a whole season. They get off the ship once.
I know.
You don't need. You tell me that you don't have enough money. You get off the ship.
They have $10 million an episode. Get off the ship.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, the Orville has done it at least twice now. So they're already winning that battle. You know, I mean, granted, it's in like, you know, the, you know, Malibu or in the hills of California, but who cares? You know, Toronto has better locations.
So now let's get into what I think is the whole writing weakness of the show.
Okay.
And you can only need to talk about it to the extent you want to.
No, go ahead, yeah.
Which is now, as writing, you have six main characters.
Mm-hmm.
If one of them didn't show up next season, they had a contract dispute, any one of those six characters couldn't come back next season, would you care? Would you stop watching? Would you miss them?
No.
The show would go on as strong as ever.
Yeah.
Even if Burnham disappeared, it would be a shame. It would be a shame to lose some of these people.
Yeah.
But really, the show that we have not developed anything about these characters that give us enough of a connection. It's like I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting for the show to start. And, you know, they worked very hard the first two episodes, I call them the prequel episodes.
Yeah.
But to get us on board with Burnham. And I was. By the beginning of episode three, I'm watching Burnham's character. This mm-hmm. is really interesting to me. But by the course of the season, that was frittered away.
Yeah.
And now I look back at those prequel episodes and I say, this is just backstory. If this had been a movie, there would not have been screen time. We would have met Burnham at the trial.
And yeah, yeah.
This was, all of that is, okay, so part of what's also missing amongst these characters is their interpersonal relationships and dynamics. I don't need this to be a soap opera, but obviously, things that worked very well in all of these dramas we keep referencing is relationships between people.
Yeah.
And what they've done is they've acknowledged, like, oh yeah, people have, these characters have to have conflicts with each other. But they're coming out of nowhere. It's coming, they are arguing with each other, they're hostile to each other, but not for any specific reason.
Yeah.
It kind of, you take a step back, it's like, geez, this is a cranky bunch of assholes. Like, what's his problem with her? What's her problem? What is his problem with him? They don't really have a reason to have a problem with each other. Yes, yeah. Burnham was a mutineer. People get over that pretty quick.
Yeah.
And not to mention, we, as the audience, really sympathize with her being a mutineer. So that wasn't quite, that gets dropped.
The only character I care about as far as a backstory is Saru, just because mm-hmm. we, like, he's the one who has the most compelling reason to have any sort of emotions, because he was screwed over by Burnham. Mm-hmm. Like, he watched mm-hmm. his captain be killed by her, basically, or, like, you know, to some degree, right? I mean, like,
yeah.
He was passed over, you know, so he's the only character who has anything that we can have a line, you know, that say, oh, this is why you're upset. Everybody else is just like, why is Stamets mad? Why does, you know, why is Ash, you know, like this? I mean, there's nothing. It's just we're all being told instead of shown.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And so conflict is not made out of people fighting. It's made out of the thing that causes them to fight.
Yeah.
And it's the equivalent of, you know, you put a gun in someone's hand. Well, that doesn't make it dramatic. What makes it dramatic is why they might fire that gun or why they're carrying that gun.
Yeah, exactly.
Just holding the gun is not the drama.
Yeah.
So there's... I came away with this feeling that all these scripts were suddenly rushed through.
Uh-huh.
That they threw out all these scripts at the last minute and rushed through. And forget the season arcs for a second. But just some basics that felt like they were missing. And that segues also into the sci-fi that's missing. We talked about this earlier
yep.
in this very podcast, that the advantage of sci-fi is more than the advantage. It's the heart of it is to explore things, to explore stories. It doesn't even have to be morality issues. It could be situations that, at the very least, it just expedites it. We don't have to create a whole situation. We can just jump into something and say, hey, here's a planet where men and women don't get along.
Right, yeah.
And So suddenly we can tell a story about that without needing 45 minutes to set up that situation.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not taking advantage of any of that. There was a moment when there's kind of a moral quandary about what to do with the water bear.
Yeah.
That was Star Trek-y, and that was sci-fi-y.
Mm-hmm.
Until it wasn't.
Until it wasn't, yeah. Until they made, like, the, you know, black, white, they took the gray choice. Oh, just plug it into this guy, and then just hurt him. Yeah, it just became, like, a sideways choice. I thought there also could have been an opportunity with Saru, you know, finally being... See, like that Saru story where, like, they're on the planet, and, like, he just turned into a crazy person, like, running super fast with bad CG. It was, like, the best of the worst. All that money, and they can't make him look good. It wasn't until the very end of the episode where he said, "For the first time, I wasn't afraid." It's like, why didn't we find that out before?
Yeah.
That should be in the middle of the episode. It's like, I'm no longer afraid. We're going to stay here. And then it's like, Saru, no, you're not thinking straight. No, I'm thinking straighter than I've ever thought before. I'm so happy. And we're going to stay here. That would have been great. But instead, they tack it on right at the very end. It's like, I've never been, you know, like, I wasn't afraid. It's like, oh, that would have been great.
Well, and that was a revelation that he was doing all of this consciously. He was doing all of this coming from character.
Yeah.
That would have been what to explore.
Exactly.
I mean, and the reason maybe not to is because, well, what are the repercussions? If he did this intentionally, then what are we going to do with him afterwards? But yet we find that out at the end. Still the same question. What are we going to do with him?
Right.
Is never addressed.
The answer is nothing. Yeah. It's just like, oh, well, don't do it again. We won't land there again.
So repercussions. I guess that's another theme here, is a lack of repercussions for people's actions.
That's, yeah. Because they just keep on blasting ahead and leaving behind whatever they just did to do something else, you know? I guess maybe, and like to that point, another great example is Harry Mudd, where Lorca made a choice to leave him in that cell, which is questionable. It's like, oh, that's kind of a rough one there.
Yeah, but then lets him go back with the parents.
Lets him go.
He literally had killed people in each one of these time loops.
Yeah.
And if that was the time loop that worked out, then he was a mass murderer.
Yes, he was many times over. And at the worst, like, why are you releasing this guy who had done that? At the very least, he took over the Enterprise. Even if he didn't, or the Discovery. Even if he didn't kill anyone, he actively took over the ship 56 times.
Yeah,
you know, so you got him for that. And then Lorca does 180 degrees, like, just let him go with his wife and this arms dealer. Like, wait, what are we doing again? That's when it became Star Trek. Where everyone's like, oh, Mudd, we'll see you around. Like, I hope not. I hope we don't.
Well, I mean, and the truth is, Mudd should have been a lighter, a less dangerous character all along. He's troublesome, but not criminal.
But,
you know, I listened to your podcast on that episode, and you referenced all the other things that it ripped off, but you didn't reference Edge of Tomorrow, the Tom Cruise movie.
Oh, true, yeah.
And that's what it was to a team.
Yes, right about that, yeah.
More than a true ripoff, especially with that little sequence where he ducks around columns because he knows exactly where people are going to walk when.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. Yeah, it's true.
So suddenly there is actually nothing original about that episode whatsoever.
Not at all. And yet that was probably the one that came closest to being slightly compelling.
It's fun to watch. Because the movie that it was based on was
right. because they siphoned off from other things. That's what this show it just draws off.
But you know what it had? A sci-fi premise.
It did. And that's the thing. I was like, oh, I can get behind this a little bit. Like, even when Lorca was like showing people, it's like, oh, like when he was showing Burnham, we can go to all these different places. You know, but we're not.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to go. We could go to Romulus. We could go here. We could go there. We're not going to go to those places. We're just going to go to different places in space and shoot at Klingon ships.
Yeah.
Is that exciting? No, it's not exciting. You have everything.
Well, now they can do it because they have the spore drive. Oh, no.
Now they broke it. Now Stamets is broken. Although you just give it to somebody else, right? I mean, I don't understand why they just don't just like keep on. It's time of war. I mean, this whole eugenics thing is kind of slippery slope. He should be tried and put in jail for injecting himself with.
Yeah. And so I have one more pet peeve before we can move on to the subject that, which is shuttles. Have you talked about shuttles?
No, let's talk about shuttles.
So suddenly, shuttles can travel around through space pretty much like super fast. They're the express trains.
Right.
And they use them all the time. These never existed in Star Trek before.
No.
And so, oh, you want to get from Starbase to the your starship? You know, it's too far for a starship to go. But, you know, it'll take them 3 days. But we'll send a shuttle. We'll get there in no time.
Right, yeah.
And it solves too many problems. You can't... You can't have it be that easy.
Yeah.
The shuttles, from my rough calculations, they can go warp 40. And yeah. Also, they're using them as FedEx trucks.
This is true. Yeah, they're delivering stuff. They're just like, yeah. They can do far more than the Discovery can, basically. They can go faster. They can go through nebula. You know, I mean...
Yeah.
You know, they're you can do anything with them, basically.
Solves too many things. Yeah. This is the problem with sci-fi... sometimes, and Star Trek, the newer Star Trek sometimes, is when the technology can do anything.
Yeah.
And when the technology can do anything, then there is no more drama.
This is true. Yeah, it's true. There was a thing, I remember it was in the Next Generation. Writers hated the replicators because they could make anything. And like, it was such a problem for them because they could never have anything that was valuable or useful break. Because they could just replicate something else. Like, oh, this is, you know, this is whatever. Because as soon as it broke, it's like, oh, replicate me another one. So they hated that.
Yeah.
And that's, like, when you come up with this technology, like these, it solves too many problems, then you don't have a show anymore. So you...
On the other hand, I mean, I wasn't a big fan in Star Trek VI when suddenly there are cooks in the kitchen.
Well...
Mixing up the batter.
With the mashed potatoes, she shoots She selectively shoots the metal around the pot. But not the mashed potatoes in the pot.
Well, sure. She had the phaser set on something.
Preserve mashed potatoes.
Put on circumference.
And she can shoot it. And everyone's okay with that. And, like, no one arrests her. Like, guys come and like, oh, it's all right. It's all right. The guys with, like, the little 1940s leather-headed football helmets come in. Remember those security guys? Like, for a time being, the security guys had the little weird helmets on. Remember that?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, they were great. And then they're like, oh, yeah.
But I understand that problem. My solution to that is replicators. You know, they can replicate simple stuff.
Yeah.
Simple proteins. Simple. Well, you know, they can't replicate dilithium crystals.
No.
Like, yeah. I mean, like a 3D printer can only print what you put, you know, in the cartridge. Yeah.
And there's nothing inside of it. It's, you know, it's just like, you know, it's like, I mean, because that's the thing, like, if you can make something that's like intricate, like an iPhone or something like that, then, you know, what's the point of anything? You know, just replicate a human being and have them be the captain someplace, you know?
I think you could replicate an iPhone. Just,
You have to do it like bit by bit. I guess my point is like something that has like finer detail, you know, that it should not do.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked it when they had cubes of food in the original series, when they... multicolored cubes of food, man. Like, oh, this is delicious, you know?
Yeah. No, excuse me. I got to text Joanne back. She wants to know about something. Do you want me to come? Arlo? Okay. This is a typical text where it's clearly dictated into the machine.
Okay.
And not. This is where, you know, our technology is not as advanced as Star Trek yet.
It's failing.
It didn't quite dictate appropriately, and then we have to try and figure out what she's trying to say. Whatever you like.
Whatever you like.
That is always the safest answer to give to your wife when she texts you a question.
I like that, yeah. I got the latest iPhone. I got the iPhone X for my birthday.
I thought it was supposed to go all the way to the outside. I don't understand. There's still a frame around it.
Well, I have a case around it, so it goes pretty close. But it also has this little weird thing, so this is not. But, I don't know if you saw that, I'll turn this off. Like, so I turn it on, and see on you, it's locked, but on me, it opens.
Huh, and interestingly, the screensaver there is the Enterprise insignia.
It is, except now that it's on the, now that it's a bigger screen, like it was usually like this, so it was usually just cut off. So, I saw your kid come out, so I think he's jonesing to go. Let's talk a little bit about continues.
Oh, yeah, Jones, I'm taking him on a skateboard tour today. My son.
Yeah, he's going on a skateboard tour, and I should get back in a little bit too.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about Star Trek Continues, and then we can maybe save it for another day.
Well, you know, that makes a lot of sense, because first of all, by now...
Have you watched them all yet or no?
I've watched about half of them.
Okay.
But We should just tease it, because by now everyone's tuned out of this podcast because we've gone so long already. Yeah. I also would love to talk about it and love to have an excuse to hang out and do more of these with you.
Let's do it again. Yeah, let's
just tease it.
All right, tease it for me. So I talked a little bit about it. You tell me a little bit about it.
So you all know what this is, right?
Yeah, I talked about it in the last episode.
There's two new episodes that were put up, a two-parter, a mm-hmm. series finale that happens at the end of the five-year mission called To Boldly Go, Parts 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic.
It's great.
It works. It's a piece of art. It's art in the truest sense, in that, you know, a lot of, what do they say? What's that saying about art? That artists start imitating by imitating other art, and then it becomes their own thing.
Yeah.
And then they evolve and learn and do their own thing. The Beatles. Beatles started out doing Little Richard and, you know, and then evolve and they created their own thing. And then painters, same thing. This is that too. This is something that started purely imitative, but then even within its imitation found its own voice. And this is, and you stop looking at the character, at the actors as being placeholders for the original characters, and you start looking at them as their own characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are new characters, and but the way that it also honors one thing I read online about the two-parter is it was all an original score, obviously based on existing compositions from the series and the movies.
Yeah, yeah.
But a composer composed it. It's basically 2 hours straight score.
Yeah.
And had an orchestra of like 40 students record it. And it's wonderful.
It's great. It's so good.
And so that mentality also applied to every other factor. The writing, the acting, the set design, the effects. It took what was original and then built its own thing after it. Never feels out of place, but at its heart, just really good writing and storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And doing it through a lens of what if this had been made in 1968 or 1969.
Yeah.
And it's a very unusual experience watching it, but also very satisfying.
Yeah, yeah. I had such a sense of closure watching it. Like as a kid, mm-hmm. when you're like, oh no, they never finished the 5-year mission. How's that going to end? And then to watch this and to see them tie off all the little loose ends, and you see where the movie's going to come in, the outfits and mm-hmm. all the ships being destroyed, and then, you know, the Enterprise. I won't, you know, but that last shot, it's like, and here's the other thing too, like Vic. I can't pronounce his
Mignogna.
Name. Mignogna. Mignogna, yeah. Never be on the podcast now. Sons of bitches. He was good. He was always good in this. And I don't know if you noticed, but in the last two episodes, he started making the transition from original series Kirk to movie Kirk. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I expected his hair to be curly in that last shot.
I know. like he permed it. Yeah, he just permed it. But he started like lowering his register and started whispering all his lines, you know, and talking like that. It's like he's turning into Shatner, you know, in his 50s, you know, in the movies. And it's like, wow, you get to see all of it right there. It's so good. Like all those little touches that this guy who's been living with this all his life and been doing this for like a year and a half now,
mm-hmm.
he connected all the dots. So that last shot of him, even the way he holds his arms, I don't know if you know, like when the doors open, shh, and he's got his arms that weird mm-hmm. kind of like mm-hmm. action figure pose. That's mm-hmm. how Kirk holds himself, you know.
Also, the way he walked,
yeah.
Sometimes, you know, people's walks are as identifiable as fingerprints, apparently,
yeah.
And that the FBI has cameras that recognize people on the most wanted list by their walk,
yeah.
And I believe that you see a friend two blocks away, and you're like, oh, hey, there's Mike McCafferty, before I can even see your face.
Yeah.
So there's something really to that. What was you were talking at the beginning of this podcast, we were talking about A Futile and Stupid Gesture, the movie I produced about early days of National Lampoon, and Joel McHale was playing Chevy Chase, and he has his walk and his body movements down in a way that... You don't, on a primal level, you're like, oh, that's Chevy Chase, because of the way his body moves, more than the voice or the face or any of that.
Oh, wow.
So I think that's also part of what's working on us in this.
Yeah, yeah. I always liked his performance. I thought he got everything. There's one in the first part. He says sabotage, which is a famous like outtake where like Shatner will not say sabotage. He says sabotage, and he said it. I'm like, oh my god, you've got it all. But he totally embodied the character by the end. And like you said, also, I think like Tony Haberkorn, who plays Spock in the beginning, I was like, he's okay. By this one, I didn't care that he wasn't doing Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
I cared that he was playing Tony Haberkorn as Spock.
Yes.
It's like, and he was killing it. He was doing some good acting there, you know? He was like, you got it, man. The guy playing McCoy, it was pretty good. His hair turned weirdly red. I don't know if you noticed that. Go back and watch it. His hair's like, who the hell are you? Like, McCoy's hair was never red, but they all got it, you know? I mean, so it was so completing to watch that, just to see that last scene.
Well, here's what I propose, which is between now and the next time we do a podcast together, I'll finish watching the whole season. I'm go back and watch the episodes I haven't watched.
Yeah.
And let that drive a conversation between you and me about Star Trek.
Let's do it, yeah.
Because you like talking about Star Trek.
I love talking about Star Trek. And you love talking about Star Trek.
Oh, you know, geez, I was talking about how NTSF SDSUV, now I'm doing a plug for a show that you can only watch occasionally in the middle of the night on reruns on Adult Swim, but please do.
That's all right.
About how we were influenced by so many Star Trek plots. Well, one of our main cast members, who played the head of the anti-terrorism unit that Paul Scheer was the main character in, who played that?
Kate Mulgrew.
Right.
Or Kate Mulgrew, whatever, yeah.
That's right. So we actually, we were influenced by Star Trek. I think once she came on board, like we just, that influenced us all the more.
Now did you ever pull her aside and say, let's just talk about Star Trek? Or were you always kind of like, I don't want to do that?
Oh, Mike.
Yeah, well, I know.
I talked to her at length.
Okay, good.
I remember it took a few weeks in the first season when at lunch one day.
You got to feel
it. I'm like, all right, so... you ready, you know, for some Star Trek questions? And of course she was. Yeah, and the truth is, she's a fascinating, interesting actress on so many levels.
Yes.
And if you want to talk about other things she's done in her career, you could do that all day.
Sure.
Yeah. But I did have to get some of the Star Trek stuff out, and they're great stories.
Yeah.
I just enjoyed her on every level as a person and as an actress.
Yeah.
And hopefully we gave her an environment that she enjoyed herself too. I think she did. I think she thought it was a hoot. We had her, the one thing that I really appreciate is we had her say a bunch of nonsense that, you know, because it's an anti-terrorism comedy, so there's all sorts of stuff in there that really means nothing.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, no, you know, I spent years like saying stuff I had no idea what it was supposed to mean because these Star Trek actors would learn to say gobbledygook, technical jargon that is completely made up, and they're just learning to say it verbatim. The same way ABBA used to sing phonetically, they didn't really speak English. They just, you know, they sang the English words. They just knew how to, they memorized the sounds.
Yeah.
So I guess that's how you do it when you're an actor saying technical jargon. You memorize the sounds, and it's like, I'll make it sound important.
Yeah. But did you ever see the Genevieve Bourgeois footage?
Oh, yeah, when she had auditioned to be the original captain, right?
She was the original captain.
That's right. Then she left, right?
Yeah. They did one day of shooting with her, and it was so bad, they're like, they got her out.
That's right. I actually was working with Blair Brown at the time, and I believe that she had been in the running for a replacement for Jennifer as well.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. I mean, because I think Kate was the runner-up, but like, we want to get her. And they shot for like 1 or 2 days with Genevieve, and they're like, this is not work. Because if you watch her try and do that techno babble, you said that, and I was like, oh, if you, like, the side-by-side, because they reshot all those scenes, and... she cannot handle it. She does not know what she's saying, and every technical thing she says, it just kind of like falls out of her mouth like lava.
Will you send me a link to this?
I will. I'll absolutely. Maybe I'll post it on our. I just want to talk about Star Trek Facebook page. But yeah, I'll say it's fascinating because like it's both scenes, like you see one, then you see the other. And they'd held on to it for a long time out of respect, but then they're like, eh, it's fine. Go ahead. But yeah, it's great. Kate Mulgrew also is great with Shatner. If you go see her at a convention,
mm-hmm.
they bring her out and then they bring Shatner out. And she is the Shatner whisperer. Because he's such a jackass. He's such a jackass. And I can't stand him. Like, he'll talk about his horses for 25 minutes. And you're like, Jesus, man. I mean, talk about Star Trek. But then she'll come out.
Well, there's a horse in Star Trek Generations.
Well, because of him. Because he demanded it, you know. And because he wanted to show up the steward by riding a horse in circles around him. He's always got to have the higher status. But he comes out and then, like, she'll come out. Or she'll come out first, I think. And then she'll bring him out. And then she'll just run the show. And, like, he flirts with her, and she gets what that's all about, mm-hmm. and she just, like, parries with him, and they're great. So we'll go to the convention, like, we'll go to the Vegas convention, and you'll watch, because he's terrible, and then she'll come out, and she's like, they'll tell me about this. And he's like, I had no idea. You know, and he just opens up for her, because, I don't know, because she doesn't care about him. You know, like, she's like, I don't, you know, whatever. Yeah. And he's, like, got this... You know, oh, it's a woman talking to me, and so like he feels like he's being pulled into that. So it's a fascinating dynamic.
I've never been to a convention.
We gotta go. We gotta all go right. This year. This, well, August we'll go.
Yeah,
we'll go to Vegas.
Let's do it.
I've teased this to you a couple of times, and you've always been too busy doing stuff. You gotta clear out some space.
Well, August tends to be our vacation month over at Abominable Pictures.
Oh, okay.
We work hard all year. We take August off except for post production.
Okay,
which is when they're on. Anyway, you don't care. You know, this is more. We'll find a way.
We'll find a way. We'll go. Well, are you leaving town in August? Is that what you're?
Well, sometimes we do. Okay. Often right. We do.
We'll figure this out. We'll get you out of there.
All right, I got to take the kid skateboarding, Mike. You got to take your kid to his rehearsal or pick him up from his rehearsal.
He's already there. You know what I'm going to do now? My wife, my birthday, got me a virtual reality, an Oculus Rift.
Uh-huh.
And I've been waiting for the past 3 days to play Star Trek yep. Bridge Commander.
Oh, I haven't played. Paul Shear has it at his house. He's invited me to come over and play it. I can't wait.
We got to do it, yeah. And then we'll play together.
Yes.
Because we can do
it. Oh, you have it at your house, of course.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody at home, this is Arlo.
Hey, Arlo.
Hi.
I'm Mike. You don't have to be interested in that. That's all right. You're not. Do you like Star Trek, Arlo?
Yeah.
All right.
We watched some of the new discoveries together.
Yeah.
Do you have? What's your impression in like one sentence? He's thinking.
Whenever
those
you
want. Those at home, he's thinking.
I guess maybe sort of addicting, sort of intriguing.
Oh, addicting mm-hmm. and intriguing. Wow. Nice language there.
It's different every time.
And yeah.
Interesting.
That's so. Not a good thing. But
Arlo's 10, if you want the demographic. And then Arlo, do you remember the first Star Trek episode we ever watched together? The Trouble with... Tribbles.
There we go. There we go. All right,
that
now
was
that was a little fun.
Little
patty balls, kitten balls.
Things, yeah. Oh. Good one to watch, yeah.
I think you're
okay.
And my friend, I don't know if you heard this podcast, my friend dated a girl named Amber Tribble. Who did you hear this story? And mm-hmm. her mother dated David Gerald,
mm-hmm.
and he put her name, he turned her name into a Tribble. Her name was Tribble, and so he named the Tribbles after her.
Oh, wow.
To kind of get back at her.
I have sitting on my desk at the office, David Gerald wrote More Trouble, More Tribbles.
Yes.
And I have it ready. It's sitting on my desk, signed, autographed.
Oh, the animated script, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty good one. So, all right, there are kids circling around us right now.
They all want to go skateboarding.
But thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this. It was a great podcast. We're going to have John back. Maybe we'll have some of the other, like the doctor here, because she's watching them as well. It'll be a blast. But John, thank you so much. Oh,
everyone's here to say goodbye. Everyone say happy Star Trek. Happy birthday, Mike. It's Mike's birthday.
Oh,
today.
It's my birthday. Yes.
Three. Happy birthday, Mike.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm Mike McCafferty. I just want to talk about
Mike McCafferty
and
Star Trek.
Those are
thank
both
you,
right.
Mike.
Comes in, everybody rides.
Your daddy can put them up and
So end the voyages of the Starship Enterprise under my command. During its 5-year mission, we explored strange new worlds. We found new life, new civilizations. And we boldly went where no man has gone before.
Let's say Seinfeld was on an island, yeah, and he was blowing Boris Karloff. What would that be like?
And it might go something like this. Oh, Mr. Karloff, I loved you in Frankenstein, and I love giving you a blowjob. Why, Mr. Seinfeld, I love having you